Hello everyone and welcome to this week's Lemon to Know podcast with me, Gary Jones. Now I hope you've all had an absolutely fantastic week and can you believe how quick the year's going? I know I can't, but I hope you're smashing your goals and it's all working really well for you. Now for today's interview, I have the magnificent Clay Lowe, who I can just spend so much time with. He is a dude, and if you want to talk Greek philosophy, if you want to talk business, if you want to talk sports, if you want to talk about anything, he is the man to go to. Now, this is a two-part interview. We will catch up with him again later on in the year, but hope you enjoy this. Part one talks about his background and how he's got to the point where he is now. So let's take it away with part one. My guest today is the fantastic, the magnificent, the legend, Clay Lowe. And I can remember listening to a podcast that you did probably about 18 months ago now with Mike Pagan.
Okay.
And that's where I first came across.
I didn't realise that. I didn't realise that the connection was the Mike Pagan podcast.
Yeah,
right.
I listened to
that him interviewing me?
Yeah, that's right. And talking about your history, your background.
Okay.
And since then, we've met loads of times, and I'm lucky enough to be part of Radio Warwickshire, which massively part of. So I'm really, really thankful for you being on my show. So thank you very much.
Yeah, no, man, I'm excited to be on the show. I know we've done a few things in the past together in little sort of snippets, but looking forward to.
It's cool. Well, in this one, I just want to kind of learn a little bit more about you as a person.
Yeah.
A little bit more about your views, about your background.
Yeah.
And then hopefully that can put a bit of context into people's minds about what you're doing now. Is that
okay?
Right?
Yeah, that sounds like a plan to me.
Lovely. So let's not start right from the beginning, because that will just be boring starting as Clay.
What, you're saying that my life is boring, man?
No, not at all. But just to give
you don't want to tell
flavor.
You about my time in the hood and that kind of stuff?
No. Not while sucking. Okay. No. Yeah, right. let's not go for baby years. But yeah, talk about, a bit about your background and what you're doing at the moment.
Yeah, so my background. So, when I left sort of high school, I went to the US military. I was an infantry officer. So I went to West Point, which is kind of like your sort of Sandhurst. It was an officer's training place, but it's a four-year university. Quite hard to get into, but and I made it, and I made it through. So, and I got a commission as a second lieutenant.
Nice. Is that what you always wanted to do?
Yeah, I think growing up as a kid, I was always into adventure, and that seemed like a natural extension, go off and do some real-world adventure, which I'm, again, is one of these things that I'm really glad to have done, because, you get a chance to see and do some things that you wouldn't ordinarily get to do as a civilian.
Yeah.
Got commissioned second lieutenant infantry. First unit was in Germany. I was with the 3rd to 5th Cavalry Regiment. I had a mechanized infantry platoon. Best job ever. And I remember when we were being trained, as I was going through sort of my infantry officer's basic course and the like, and it was like, the funnest job you'll ever have in the army is an infantry platoon leader. And they were not wrong.
Yeah.
It was just the absolute best job. If I could have stayed an infantry platoon leader for life, I would have stayed. But unfortunately, you have to get promoted and all that other stuff and keep.
So what made it the best job, though?
What made it the best job? The reason I went in was the whole adventure stuff. So it was a very physical job. It was a very dangerous job. And then there's the whole sort of camaraderie aspect. You see people, they do like yoga and Zen to find that be present.
Yep.
When you're out in the bush,
you've got to be present.
You got to be present. It's a matter of life and death to be. But it's very intoxicating, that. I don't know if you're familiar with U.S. history and the Civil War, but General Lee, one of his quotes as he was overlooking the battlefield, he said, "It's a good thing that war is so terrible. At least we grow too fond of it."
Okay.
And basically, what it is that you're alive. You feel alive in that sort of context, because you have to be. It was a great job, and the friendships and camaraderie and stuff that you sort of build in that sort of space is sort of fantastic.
Sweet. So, that sounds like a good job.
It was good. It was, it's a terrible, I don't want to sound like a warmonger or anything, it was a terrible side to the other end of it.
Yeah.
But the actual, in a sort of peacetime environment, and that sort of soldierness is quite cool.
Nice.
I enjoyed it.
Yeah. And then you get promoted.
Yeah, got promoted. Was kind of going, and you can stay in. I think it was when my son was born, just kind of made that decision that, because you deploy a lot and you're gone for 6 months at a time, and just kind of made. And I know people raise a family, there's loads of people that do it, but I made the decision that I wanted to be a part of that journey.
Makes sense.
Growing up. So it was a tough decision. Probably one of the toughest decisions in my life was deciding to sort of get out, because my whole sort of, it's been spending, my whole sort of aspirations within the identity was to do that. And then, of course, unlike a normal job, it's like, you go, all right, well, I want to move jobs, and you're handing your, it felt like quitting.
Yeah.
And of course, you're trained and bred to never quit, never give up. So it was just so hard. It was the hardest decision ever, I think, that I've ever had to actually make.
And to be fair, I don't think there's going to be much harder decisions that someone would have to make.
To kind of
stop being the person who you are at that particular point in time.
Yeah.
Which you've kind of, as you said, bred to do that and have that mindset.
Yeah.
To go against that.
Yeah.
That must have been kind of.
Yeah,
it was hard.
It was a tough one, but it was cool. I mean, it just opened up other opportunities. So when I left the army, I went to work for Merrill Lynch as a financial consultant. Did that for a while.
Yeah.
And then went to work for General Electric. It's kind of one of these things where I was still trying to figure out what I wanted to be when I grew up, post-army-wise. But then I got into training.
Okay.
I became a technology trainer at Merrill Lynch because I stopped doing the brokerage bit. And then I found my other love, which was training and development, which I've been in ever since. So I've probably been doing training and development now since... 2000? So 17 years.
Yeah,
now?
17 years. Yeah.
Yeah. So 17 years. I've been in training and development now, in one capacity or another, just because I love. I love personal development from a personal standpoint, but then the opportunity to help and develop and inspire and other people,
which I'm sure you're doing when you're in the infantry as well.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So I mean, if we count those, I've been a trainer all my life.
And that's
because you're exactly right. I mean, our job in peacetime is training, and that's what we did, all the time, day in and day out. Physical training, mental training, and a lot of people maybe think of the military as maybe one dimensional, but it is multiple dimensions. So you get training and sort of philosophy, you get training and psychology. I mean, so because you have to, and you got to be aware of the political, geopolitical situation around you. So there's a lot involved.
There's a lot of balls to juggle in that.
Yeah. And as an officer, you got that added dimension of the whole sort of leadership bit, and then for your soldiers, you're kind of their mom, their dad, their brother. You're everything to them, especially when you sort of deployed. So you've got that.
It's a lot of actual responsibility.
It's a ton. And I always say to people, like, when I'm doing the, when I'm training now, there's two things. I'm working with some of these companies and things that I work now, and people are moaning about stuff. I was like, it's not a two-way rifle range, so it's not that bad. So, and then the other thing, and I look at some of these kids, and they're sort of like 18, 19, 20, and I'm thinking, when I was 20, 21, there's a lot of responsibility that gets heaped on your shoulders. So, you've got multi-million dollars worth of equipment. You've got 30, 40 people's lives, and you're literally making life and death decisions.
Yeah.
And I was like, mechanized infantry. And because just imagine, so for mechanized infantry, you've got four Bradley fighting vehicles.
Okay.
And each vehicle has three crews. So you got a driver, the gunner, and the...
So they've each got an individual role in that.
In that. Plus you've got dismounted infantry guys in the back.
Okay.
But as a platoon leader, I've got four of these tracks. The driver can't see to his right.
Okay.
So I actually have to stand out of the hatch and be giving him commands.
Okay.
I also have to be looking out for bad guys.
Okay.
And I also have to be listening to the rest of my platoon that are talking on the net. And you've got to monitor the company and battalion it. So there's all these voices in your head. And you're trying to focus on what you're doing, and you're moving at speed. So, some wild times and a lot of stuff, but all good stuff.
So if you compare that to some other people who are not moaning, but finding difficulties.
Picking up the phone to make a phone call to do sales call, and they're like, "Ah, it's like, come on, man."
there's some kind of perspective
roles. Let's get this perspective right here. Like I said, I've been primarily in training and development, you know, well, most of my sort of adult life in that sense. And as a civilian, I've been doing it for sort of 17 years, starting out with the sort of Maryland Specs technology training. Found myself here in the UK because do you mention companies on your podcast?
We can mention companies, yeah.
I came over as a part of a joint venture with Merrill Lynch and HSBC Bank. And then just kind of stayed on with the joint venture that they put together. And just broadened my sort of training aspects. So doing leadership training, a lot of the soft skills, so presentation skills. I do a lot of sales-related training, management training. So anything on a corporate side of the house where, you know, sort of training and development spectrum. And the whole sort of spectrum from training needs analysis to design to actual delivery as well, and evaluation of it. So that's been pretty much my role in that aspect. And then I guess the full spectrum of the training. So I train, coach, facilitate in any one of those roles, depending on what outcome people are sort of looking for. I don't know if we jumped ahead to your other segment of your podcast.
Not really, no, it's all good. It all gives context to what you're doing now compared to what. So you're working for Merrill Lynch and HSBC at that particular time. Was there a point where you thought, do you know what, I can do this by myself?
Yeah, I think the main thing on that is that on the inside, as because I, you know, I fell in love with the sort of training and development. So it was two decisions, really. One was that if you wanted to advance in the company, and I like advancing, you kind of had to, unless you wanted to be a long, slow process, you kind of have to go back into the business. So go into training for a little while, and then you go back into the business, that sort of thing, which I didn't want to do anything else in the company, but train. And then the second thing, which is unfortunate, is that, you know, training is a cost center. It doesn't bring any money into a company. So whenever there's redundancy time, training is usually your sort of first thing to go. And I think it was like maybe the third round of redundancy being in that situation. And for me, it was like, well, you know, if what I do inside the company is feels of that little value, that as soon as, you know, we're having a little dip, it's like, well, training can go.
It's not worth actually doing it.
I made the decision to, you know, sort of take my sort of show on the road, and it was a company that had that helped us out from a consultancy point of view when I first came over and was setting up this company, and I just kind of kept in contact with them, and then sort of started that relationship. And so I think end of 2004 is when I set out on my own as an independent training consultant, and just been in that sort of space ever since.
Was it almost the kind of weight lifted off your shoulders, or did you feel the pressure at that point of doing it? Because I think people go two separate ways. They feel relieved and exhilarated and think, right, I've got my baby now and this is what I'm going to be doing. Or they think, oh no,
I don't have either way, actually. I guess my mindset isn't in that way. It was just kind of,
this is the next stage.
Yeah, and it's just me. And I think that's maybe one of the things that I maybe don't do so well is separate out work from... So for me, work and play is one and the same. So there isn't this... So to separate those out...
Some people would say actually that's a good thing.
And some people would say that's a bad thing, separating them out. But I probably didn't have that kind of perspective. It was another aspect or evolution of what I was doing, but now I was doing it for myself as opposed to a company, which is in a sense it gives me, put me in a more controlled, as in, you know, when you work inside of a company, you kind of have to train on whether you want to train that particular subject or not necessarily, whereas now I can focus on this stuff that I really get fired up about. And working with people, so you get, you know, get that.
Well, I'll tell you what, we'll break there, and then when we come back in part two, we'll talk about what gets you fired up, and talk a bit more about what you're doing at the moment. Is that
okay,
right?
Cool.
Nice.
Everyone knows that business owners and networkers have to make presentations. But even for these people, that can cause sickness and sleepless nights. If the words booming heart rate, anxiety, dread describe your emotions as your turn to speak approaches, then contact me at Ernie Said. That's www.erniesaid.info, and we will make those words comfortable, confident and inspiring. Ernie Said.
Let's rejoin me and Clay for part two of this brilliant interview.
We're back now for part two.
so we're back now.
We've just been talking in a little kind of interval about starting the second section of our podcast with "so." And yeah. I made it a point of not saying "so." Cheers, Kate. Right, we're back now for part two. And yeah, so and we finished off the last part by you kind of moving away to your next stage of your kind of career. And that was setting up your own business.
Yeah.
And you're in control, and you're kind of you said a key phrase which kind of resonated with me. You were doing what you felt passionate about, what you had fire for.
Yeah, so I mean, you know, training and development is a huge sort of spectrum.
Yeah.
And you know, the subject matter that, you know, I get the most out of, enjoyment out of, is when I'm working with leaders and doing leadership training, the team building stuff, so bringing teams together and getting them to work and gel as a, not as individuals but as an actual
as a unit.
And then anything where, like, the thing that I love about the coaching aspect, because I do coaching both for business coaching, and I also do the personal coaching, and the thing that really fires me up about that is helping people to reduce the blockers that stand in their way of being the best version of themselves, basically.
Okay.
And the limiting beliefs that might be holding them back, and being able to help them shift and get a better perspective on their situation or problem or challenge or whatever it is, so that they can, you know, ultimately go on and do the thing that they want to do. So I really love that aspect, which is what I've been actually focusing on probably most of 2016.
Yeah.
I've been shifting the emphasis from the training stuff that I do inside of corporations to the coaching stuff. So I've always been a part of my belt. The coaching aspect's always been a part of that, realm. As I said, I do facilitation, training and coaching. Been emphasizing the coaching aspect until in the last year, and I'm going to carry that on into 2017 as well.
Nice.
And switching the gears from working to the big corporate stuff and doing some more of the personal coaching, business coaching, you know, working with individuals on that aspect.
I just want to kind of link two little bits together, because I've got a question in my mind. You mentioned about, and it was quite a key point for me when you said about you were delving into the people's mindsets to stop them overcoming the blocks that would
reduce the sort of blocks standing away.
Do you find that corporate, the side of it, and kind of small businesses or individuals have the same blocks, or do you think
people are people, isn't it? Even what people ask me, is there a difference between the sort of corporate leadership and military leadership that I do? It's people at the end of the day, so it's different in the application of what you're doing, but the underlying principles are the same. And it's the same with, you know, I find, like, when I'm coaching doing inside of corporate, actually, until you get rid of the personal blockers, the stuff that they need to do. So take for sales, for instance, and people have sort of sales reluctance and things like that. You know, it isn't that they need more selling techniques. They don't need another playbook.
No.
A lot of the things that inhibit them is stuff that's, you know, the stories that they tell themselves in their head. Eliminate that, and then everything else kind of flows smoothly. So,
you know,
I find myself on either end of that. You end up working with that, and that's the thing. I think that's the beauty of coaching, is you work with, you know, like training. It's like, here's a subject, and they learn that subject and they do it. Whereas, you know, coaching is, we can then work on what your individual blocker is, because you might be good at, if there's 10 tasks, you might be good out of 8 out of the 10, but it's 2 that you struggle with, and There may be particular reasons.
So it's going to be unique to everybody. It's not going to be the same.
It won't be the same for everyone because people will be at different places in their development. And, you know, and a lot of times people think like coaching is just if I have a, it's like it's to focus on your weak stuff. But actually, no, it's like if you wanted to go to the next level, how do you go to the next step? If you're a superstar, how do I walk on water? So, you know, it's like
everybody's got their own perception of where they are now.
Yeah, and everybody will have a blind spot, so you can only see to the limits of your perspective on that end. So we'll all have these blind spots, and you know that sort of coaching aspect, you get an outsider's view, you know, you challenge people's perceptions of what they may be think they're seeing, but maybe not know what they're sort of projecting or coming across. So it's a multi-dimensional in that aspect.
It's quite a unique way of thinking about it as well. Because as an outside person, I'm sure it's probably easier for you to spot something rather than someone actually being inside their world.
Yeah, when you're inside your world, you're in the heat of the battle, aren't you?
Yeah.
So you won't be able to see from an objective point of view, plus you know you got a vested interest, and it's the same if you're working with someone that has a vested interest in it. So like you go to a friend or whatever, and you're going to have a different conversation than you would with a coach, because from my point of view, I'm not in that. You know, whether you succeed, whether you do it or not, ultimately is your responsibility.
Yeah.
I can see it from that position and challenge, and because I'm not necessarily trying to be liked by you, but trying to.
You're just trying to get the best result for that person.
Yeah, absolutely. And if that means, you know, giving you the boot, being hard or being gentle or supportive, so you go in a sort of full spectrum.
It's quite refreshing to actually hear that. Actually, I suppose if you break it down, you're taking the emotion out of it.
Yeah, in a
sense. Because friends and family would have an emotional context to that situation.
You still have the emotion in it, but not the emotion of the sort of attachment and, you know, this is, you know, my brother, uncle, cousin, what have you, and they're probably coming from maybe a more sympathetic point of view versus, hey, how do we get to change and get to change fast?
Yeah.
I did a vlog on this yesterday, I think it was. Was it a vlog? Yeah. And it was actually a Facebook Live, and there's like four sort of components, and for me, helping me with clarity.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want to be successful at doing whatever you want to do, the more clear you are about what that is, so if you can articulate it fully, more likely to be successful as opposed to having a sort of fuzzy idea what that is one of them. This idea about action, because sometimes we have an idea what we want to do and we know some of the things that we ought to do, but we don't do them.
Makes sense.
There's that action bit. And then there's the sort of accountability. So sometimes you've got high achievers like yourself and other folks that we come in contact with. It's different if you have, like, I got a task to do, but I don't have anyone that's going to be riding me. So I'll say, I'm going to do that today. But then if I don't do that, then there's no
comeback.
There's no comeback. Whereas if you know what you're coaching, you're committed to do something by next week, there's that accountability factor.
Yeah, everyone needs accountability.
Yeah, that sort of thing. And then the fourth component of that is the whole sort of motivation piece. So a lot of stuff that I do on the Coach Clay blog is around sort of motivation and the exploration of different points of view and just to get people G'd up and sort of motivated, inspiration, that kind of sort of stuff. But
let's talk about that a little bit more, because there's loads of different kind of sides that I see. You've got your Soul Cruiser, Coach Clay, you've got the Radio Warwickshire and Havana. But let's talk about those kind of different hats, because
they all drive
the same wires as far as I can see.
Yeah, but it's an interesting thing. So I would consider myself a bit of a renaissance man, right? And I don't know if you caught my poster that I did on the specialisation, which is specialisation is for insects, which is because the world kind of pushes, seems to be the general thing, is to specialise and be an expert and that sort of thing. The ancient Greeks were big on that we shouldn't be specialists, and you want to be excellent in all things possible that humans can be, physically, spiritually, intellectually, and the like. But then And I don't know the quote by heart, but it's essentially that you know, we should be able to do lots of things.
Yeah.
And the quote ends with specialization is for insects.
Okay.
And you know, for me as a sort of a Renaissance man, really, it's like I feel I can do anything that I want to do. So I've never had an ambition to, you know, if I want to start an internet radio station, all right, cool. You know, and I love knowledge and books. Mm. As you'll see on my pitch, you know, I've just books everywhere. I just love. And you know my favorite scene, and I posted this over Christmas, is the scene in Lord of the Rings where Gandalf is going into the library to do some research on the ring in the first one. The Fellowship of the Ring. That's me. Boom. Going in there, my stacks of books. So I love knowledge. So for me, it's like, I want to do internet radio station, boom, go buy the books, go. And because I'm a self-learner, so I probably don't go on a lot of courses and things like that, because I just prefer to go and learn it myself, read all the books. And
yeah, I suppose if you do that, you've got a passion, you've got a drive to do that, so therefore you absorb it so much quicker than actually you need to learn this.
It's my curiosity of just learning for knowledge for knowledge's sake is what I like. So yeah, so there is the Radio Orchestra aspect. Yeah. And
so for people who don't know what Radio Orchestra is, what is it?
Yeah, so Radio Orchestra was an internet radio station, essentially, and then the idea was to have social radio, in a sense, so bringing the radio back to the community, and do, it's like the 21st century campfire is a kind of the thing that was driving me, as in like we're doing here. So we gather around, we actually have got a fire, and you know, and you share your stories, and so this was an opportunity to have the little, you know, us normal folk, who, you know, and to share our stories and tell our stories in whatever guise that is. So that was the idea behind the Radio Warwickshire aspect. And then, of course, I've got the Soul Cruiser website, and that probably fuels my poetry and art-related side of life, and then probably the deeper philosophical side. Whereas Coach Clay will have or approach philosophy from a point of view like the ancient Greeks, which is a practical philosophy and how to live. Mm-hmm. And then we're having that sort of question. I think on the Soul Cruiser one, I probably dip sometimes into the sort of existentialness of life. So it's a little bit deeper.
Yeah.
But it's also a place where my poetry goes on and my art stuff goes on, and that sort of, and literature and that sort of thing, and the writing. And then Cafe Havana Cafe podcast, which kind of bridges a gap in between. It's a conversational style podcast, but we cover practical wisdom and conscious living, basically.
Must be over 30 shows now on that.
We did show 35 today.
Beautiful.
So we've been rocking along for quite a bit on that one, and quite established following on that one as well, so
nice.
I'm quite psyched about that and where we can take it in for the new year as well.
So in terms of finding Havana sessions, where would you
can find us on iTunes, and you can subscribe to it and get it just delivered to you on your sort of podcasting app that you use. We have a website too, havanacafesessions.co.uk. You can find us there. We're on Facebook, we're on Twitter as well. So
nice.
If you're interested, do go and subscribe and join the conversation. So it's digging. And go to Soul Cruise as well and hang out there. If anyone, if you ever want to find me online, please go to Twitter and go to Soul Cruise.
Yeah.
Because
that's where your main kind of outlet is.
Yeah, because that for me, Twitter is a place where I can link all aspects of me in. And,
completely.
You can filter people to different places that I am. And it's an interesting thing because and I don't know how much time we got left, but I've been blogging forever. I've been blogging since blogging started, really. I've been a blogger for since 2000-ish.
What got you into blogging?
Well, I've always been into writing and poetry and that sort of thing, and then when this whole sort of blogging aspect came, it was just an extension of that. I was able to write and share my expressions that way. And blogging used to be a whole other animal. This when blogging was fun. It was. I mean, back in the days before the social media explosion, it was a nice blogging community there. And I've got friends now that I met through my blog that I've never met in real life. In fact, one I just met her last year or the year before.
Yeah.
In physical space, but there's a few that I've never met ever, but we met on my blog in the comment section. Whereas now, I mean, of course, blogging is still there, but there's a lot, you know, most people tend to hang out on the social media aspect.
Yeah.
But anyway, so yeah, I've been blogging for 10,000 years in a day. It's just great stuff, and I love that. And I used, because I think I mentioned in part one, I mean, I'm just, you know, my ultimate vision. I know there's another quote. It's about your work and your play being one and the same, and leave other people to distinguish which if you're working or playing. And you know that whole
kind
quote
of filters completely to what you were saying before.
So, you know, and as I say, if you love what you do and do what you love, you'll never work another day in your life. This is always this kind of intertwined. And I used to try and run my blogs that way, to have all of me in one space.
Yeah.
But I think because people's mind works in a different way and we need labels to help us, it confuses people, isn't it? So it's like, oh, if I'm on this blog and he's posting about art one day and the next day he's posting about, you know, existential philosophy, or now he's talking about habits, it confuses people. So, you know, I think beginning of last year, I'd decided to streamline them out a bit.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is all coming full circle to say, if you want to know all my stuff, Soul Cruise is the place to go, because I'll push them out on that. So the Coach Clay will just be facilitated on the learning and developmental spectrum. Soul Cruise is the art, the poetry, the writing, the culture, pop culture, all that stuff. And then of course Havana Cafe has its own sort of identity as well.
Brilliant.
And Radio Warwickshire has its own space as well too.
Cracking. Now, if someone wants to kind of work with you in terms of a business coach aspect, do you work one-to-one? Do you work in groups? How, you know, how does that work?
Primarily one-to-one. Groups work as well. I have been pushing to you can go to the Coach Clay website and there's an appointment aspect, and I tend to work on a sort of program basis. So it's 6-week blocks generally. And we kind of start there. We kind of figure out where it is that you want to go. And a big thing for me is this as well, is like people will come and I want to do this thing. And what I find is, and one of the things I like to explore is making sure that the values and vision and mission are sorted.
Okay.
Because I find that if we go down the coaching process and you're not really sure of your real why, somewhere along it collapses.
Makes sense. It's like building a home on a dodgy ground.
Yeah, so you need the foundation. Yeah. One, it gives you the, when things, because every, you know, it's tough if you're trying to, you know, do your thing. And and so when you have those real down moments or in your dip, if you have that touchstone to be able to connect with your why, that brings you, you know, that much more alive. So
brilliant.
Yeah.
So they can check it out on the website. So,
yeah, check out to Coach Clay one. Yep. And then I do the, just, you know, yeah, you can sign up for a free coaching session. I know, you know, we talk marketing here, some people, oh, don't give things away for free. But you know what? For me, coaching is, we got to have a conversation first.
Yes.
One, it gives me a feel for, are you ready to change or not change? Because some people say they want to change, but there's something really holding them back and they're not really ready to change.
No.
And then, of course, there's not much I can do unless the person's willing. And then, you know, you have to have the right, the personalities need to match as well.
Yeah.
So that's why that, and I don't like the consultation thing. It's like, you know what, I'm a coach, so we're going to coach, so the first session, and it is a coaching session, and we rock, and then, you know,
then you see if
and if you're really serious about achieving and doing the thing that you want to do, then we roll on and just carry on from there.
Cracking.
Yeah.
Well, that's absolutely spot on. Yeah. Now, at the end of every kind of interview, I ask someone for their kind of golden nugget. So this is their kind of big top tip This could be for an individual, could be for business.
We already heard it. Love what you do, do what you love, and you'll never work another day in your life.
Beautiful. Mm. Absolutely beautiful. So if someone wants to get hold of you, is Soul Cruiser the best way of doing it? Checking out.
Yeah, if you're on Twitter, then you can go to Soul Cruiser, but not everybody's on Twitter, so you can find me at, if you're interested in the coaching aspect, then just go to coachclay.co.uk. If you're more to art and poetry and pop culture and all the cool stuff of life, you can go to soulcruiser.com, which, and it's SOULCRUZER.
Nice one. Well, cheers, Clay, for today.
All right.
Absolutely cracking.
We got some new guests here. You're going to get our guest here on.
Hey, why not? Really, she's all encompassed. Let's do it. You catch up with you soon.
All right, buddy.
Cheers. Thank you so much, Clay. So check out his free websites for all his latest news and information. So whatever you want to look at, check him out. But check him out, Soul Cruiser, he's a dude. Thank you very much, Clay, for that brilliant interview. Now, all of these interviews that have been on the Lemton Hour podcast have also been on my show on Radio Warwickshire. It's called Lemton Hour Radio Show, and you can find out every Monday between 6:30 and 7:30 in the evening, and it's repeated every Wednesday between 5:00 and 6:00. Now, if you like this, please share it with everyone you know, and let's get them on board with Lemton Hour podcast. You're available to subscribe to on iTunes. Have a great week, everyone. Take care.